Welcome back to the Business of Government Magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. It is said that transparency promotes accountability. This theme has become a central focus of the current administration. The forum in this edition of the Business of Government Magazine explores the movement toward greater transparency and accountability in government. From a variety of perspectives, each article outlines how this movement will provide both opportunities and challenges to government executives. Here's John Kaminsky, Senior Fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government.
Day one, President Obama issued a policy memorandum saying that he wants the government to be more transparent, more participative, and more collaborative. And so what we did in this forum was bring together people that have thought about these kinds of issues. For example, Hal Steinberg wrote an article on financial transparency and as a way to improve accountability. Now, the voluminous amount of data that's out there needs to be rethought in terms of how does the information provide meaning, especially to citizens. Another article by Bob Lloyd looks at the challenges of tracing dollars below the grantee and the contractor level. Ellen Miller, she advocates for the use of the web as a tool for greater transparency and openness for citizens to learn more about what the government is doing. And then I have an article that closes it out, talking about ways of engaging citizens in performance reporting.
John Kaminsky comments on how the future is already here.
Well, the future is in a way already here. There's three things that are driving the whole notion of transparency, collaboration, and greater participation. First is there's obviously new technology tools, the use of social media on the web and a greater use of video and analytic tools and all. But the second is that the millennial generation is moving into the workforce, and they've never known the world without the internet, and they have a different way of working. And then the third is that with the increased complexity in government, that there is a shift ongoing, both in the public and the private sector, from the use of hierarchy and command and control approaches and bureaucracy to more collaborative and network-based approaches to getting results.
If transparency and accountability are going to translate into better government, the question is what the federal government and its scores of agencies should report, particularly for financial and program results. Here's Hal Steinberg, one of our forum contributors.
Well, the main focus is that this president is talking about transparency and accountability. And what does that really mean? And what is the role of the financial reporting? Are we really being transparent? And are we being transparent for things that are useful? And if not, what can be done to become more transparent and become more transparent for things that are useful?
How should proper transparency and accountability be provided? Hal has an interesting perspective.
Well, the important things at the agency level is the concern with the performance of all of the programs that we're sinking billions of dollars in. Are these programs that we really want? Is the mission right? Is the goals right? Are we doing them in a way that we can see that we are indeed achieving success? And what kind of success are we achieving, and how does it benefit you? How do people benefit from it? So I think that is what the agency should be transparent about. Are they achieving, are they pursuing the right goals, and are they achieving those goals in ways that benefit the American people?
Hal Steinberg speaks about the value of the performance and accountability reports.
The value of the performance and accountability reports is probably two benefits. The real benefit is they could produce the report, prepare the report, go through all of the work, and never even print it. And they probably would have gotten 95% of the benefit out of producing a PAR, because what it did is it compelled them to establish the systems that would provide them with reliable financial information, reliable performance information. The second benefit is to those folks that have a day-to-day working interest in a particular agency. Now, what do you do for the person on the street? Americans get their information, in sound bites, in skimming the headlines. Having said that, those things that would be pertinent to people getting an understanding of what an agency has achieved, what its problems are, what its challenges are, how these are going to affect the American people. And that maybe takes 25 pages, maybe it takes a few more. Hopefully you can get it down to less. If they can do that, then you're going to have a wider audience for each agency's report. I don't think the role of the PAR goes away. I think we still have to have a process in which the agencies put together all of the information.
This edition of the Business of Government magazine offers compelling viewpoints on the recent presidential transition, leadership comparisons of the last three NASA administrators, and ways to collaborate more effectively across boundaries using Web 2.0 technologies. Martha Kumar presents a first-hand account of government security initiatives surrounding the most recent presidential transition, chock-full of thoughts and reflections from those directly involved.
The focus of the article is the national security aspect of the transition of 2008-2009. There was much more of an emphasis in this transition than in previous ones in making sure that there was no gap between the transition and the inauguration. It really all goes back to the attacks of September 11th to make sure that there was continuity in government and that the transition would be smooth and that whoever came in would have a good understanding of what the situation was. And so the September 11th Commission pointed to problems that had existed in the government when the attacks occurred. For example, there were a lot of vacancies in second-tier jobs in the national security area. And so they wanted to see people fill those jobs and get up to speed quicker than was the case in 2001. So what they recommended was that there be early clearance of people, that the two major party candidates be able to put in names of people for clearance for their transition teams. So the White House provided for a process of clearing people. The Obama people took real use of that, and they sent in between 150 and 200 names. So that once the election occurred, then they were ready with a team for the transition for the post-election period and for the inauguration as well.
The second area of recommendation is providing national security threat information to the incoming team. Here's Martha Kumar.
The 9/11 Commission was very interested in getting a new administration up to speed during the transition period, and then once they came in. So they said that in their report that the outgoing administration should provide the president-elect as soon as possible a classified, compartmented list that catalogs operational threats and major military or covert operations. In 2007, President Bush talked to his chief of staff, Joshua Bolten, and told him that he wanted the best transitions they could have. He said it was particularly important because it was wartime. And Steve Hadley, who was the national security advisor for President Bush, he had been thinking about bringing together memoranda outlining issues that were going to be important to national security and foreign policy, and memoranda on countries and on specific issues. So they had 40 of them that they put together. And then they also separately put together a list of 17 contingency plans. And in fact, there was one of the contingency plans would deal with the any threats on the inauguration. And there was a threat on the inauguration, which evaporated during the inauguration day. But for a period of about 2 days, it was something that they were very concerned about.
Martha Kumar rates the recent presidential transition.
This transition was, I would say, about the best prepared one we've had. And I think it's taught us that to prepare for a transition, you have to start very, very early, and that you have to have all parts of government involved, that Congress has to be involved, executive departments and the White House.
Why do administrative leaders of government agencies succeed or fail? The answers are barely understood, although virtually everyone admits that the subject of leadership is fascinating. Professor Harry Lambright of the Maxwell School at Syracuse University recently studied the tenures of three NASA administrators, Dan Golden, Sean O'Keefe, and Michael Griffin.
I was asked to take a look at essentially what they brought to the organization and their contributions to the organization and any factors that contributed to their success or lack thereof in what they tried to do. The three were amazingly different. Golden was almost a prototype of the entrepreneurial style executive. He was a very good salesman, good speaker. He was exceedingly evangelical about space, a true believer, and his passion was obvious to anyone who ever came. He was very good on the outside, very good outside man, not such a good inside man. When O'Keefe was hired to become NASA administrator in 2001, it was mainly because he was seen as a good manager, good inside man. His basic background was public administration. He was deputy director of OMB, and he was, I think, uniformly regarded as a competent manager, not flashy like Golden, not necessarily entrepreneurial, but someone who would fit the times. He also was a good salesman inside. He was, in addition to being a good manager, he was a good political operator. The third administrator, Mike Griffin, was more a chief engineer kind of man, a technical manager. Very good on the inside, not so good on the outside, not so good a politician. But he was his job was really to be an implementer, and he did the best he could in a terrible environment for trying to get a new program started.
Here's Professor Lambright on the central lessons from his research.
So the central lesson is that effectiveness goes along with a match between the individual's organizational style, the needs of the organization, and the times in which they serve. I think it's because the process of match, which I mentioned, style, man, organization, times, is dynamic. And often the most difficult part of the whole equation is the man himself. The leader has always got to be aware that no matter what you do, sooner or later, something unanticipated is going to happen that will really test you. It's a situation of luck. And how you deal with that will determine essentially your effectiveness or your fate.
Government increasingly faces challenges and is expected to achieve results that reach across agency and program boundaries. These challenges include such things as climate change, food safety, disaster response, and cybersecurity. The traditional approach has been to use agencies and programs to address the nation's challenges. John Kaminsky, senior fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government, outlines a different approach in his article, Collaborating on Cross-Boundary Outcomes from the Front Line.
About a decade ago, a business management expert by the name of Jim Collins noticed that some businesses made some dramatic improvements in their performance by instituting what he called catalytic mechanisms. And that was a mechanism that produced desired results, but in unpredictable ways. I identified in this article several things that I thought might be catalyzing in the federal government. The first was encouraging radical transparency. The second was organizing around customers. The third was engaging citizens in co-production. And then finally, empowering employees to collaborate and innovate. And in each one of those, the government actually has some pilots or something similar to that already underway. For example, under encouraging radical transparency, the Obama administration has established a number of different initiatives. One was data.gov, which is asking agencies to post administrative or raw data available in machine-readable form. The second, organizing around customers. Canada pioneered a citizen-centered network that they called Service Canada to deliver integrated social services organized around the key life events in any citizens. The third catalytic mechanism, engaging citizens in co-production, an example is the Patent and Trademark Office, which examines new ideas to determine whether they're considered novel and should be patented, is now engaging volunteers to look at these patent applications to see whether they, as experts in their field, see something as being new or novel. The fourth area, catalytic mechanism, is empowering the employees to actually collaborate and innovate among themselves. Well, in conclusion, the four catalytic mechanisms are actually enabled by Web 2.0 technologies. So this is an opportunity for government to try some new things.
I hope you have enjoyed the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. You may order or download a free copy of the Fall-Winter 2009 The Business of Government magazine at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.